Your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
It is 12 minutes after 12 o'clock here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Welcome to Wednesday afternoon on 720 WGN as we sit in the Allstate Showcase studio here along Michigan Avenue. And, well, I know you were listening to the news, listening to Orion and Kim and everyone. I had the other ear on Terry Savage, who's sitting beside me, because it was like sitting next to someone yelling at their TV when they were watching a ball game they didn't like.
Like being a volcano ready to explode over this trade idea.
You couldn't stop, right? So you're in favor of the tariffs? Is that what I'm thinking?
Stop it. Don't even get anybody to think that way. I think this goes down as one of the most self-destructive and stupid economic actions. Forget politics. We can all have all debates on that, but both sides of the aisle recognize, and I will give you three sensible reasons why it was insane, what would be insane, I hope they don't go through with it, to start a trade war with China or anybody else.
All right, so I want to hear those reasons, but first, news earlier today, U.S. Steel announcing they're going to call back 500 workers at their Granite City plant who'd been laid off. Now, this is interesting to me.
Well, that's like those workers in the Indiana air conditioning plant who weren't really going to be laid off, but they are.
In a way,
everybody
it is.
Everybody wants to curry favor.
In a way, because the steel companies want this tariff. So they want to build momentum saying, look how many great things will happen if we have these tariffs. We don't even have them yet. They're announcing these quote-unquote plans to bring people back over the next four years,
tax cuts were real money, but promises of jobs. You need a cost benefit analysis. Let me make 3 points. Let's start out with consumers. You may save a few hundred jobs on the margin. You may improve the jobs of maybe a couple hundred thousand people, and that's nothing to sneer at. But millions of Americans, virtually everyone, will be negatively impacted by steel and aluminum tariffs because the cost of those products that goes into everything from your car to your appliances to a Coke can or a beer can, all of those costs will go up. And do you think companies are going to absorb those costs? No, a tariff is a tax that is ultimately passed on to consumers in the form of higher prices. And to the extent companies do absorb those costs, they have less money to invest and grow the economy.
Can I give it to you in another way? And this is to show it's not necessarily political. 2009, President Obama had a tariff on Chinese tires. Started tough and then eased out over the year. This one study I said that said there were 1,200 jobs saved under the analysis, but at a collective cost of $926,000 per job.
Let's just give the people the money.
Right. I'll take that money.
Okay. Instead of being a tire worker.
Right.
But that's the first thing. We can all intuitively understand that. There's just no argument to that. The second part of it is, of all the times and places to pick a trade war, especially when the economy's growing and you've got a tax cut that's creating growth and jobs, they picked the wrong target. All the rhetoric has been around China. We're going to have a trade war with China. It's so unfair. Look, we import 12% of our imported steel comes from Canada, also from Mexico and Brazil. China, we import 2% of our steel and aluminum imports. So we've picked the wrong target, not that there's a good target, but Canada especially is our second largest trade partner after China, and we have, arguably, by statistics measurements, a $12.5 billion surplus. We have really good trading relations with Canada.
So what's this about?
And they join us in everything we do overseas for foreign policy and everything else. That's insane. And the one thing, let me just give you the nail in the coffin of this idea of a trade war is, you know, foreigners now own about $6 trillion worth of our $20 trillion national debt. We finance our debt, our deficits, the total cumulative national debt, now $20 trillion, by selling treasury bills, notes, and bonds. The biggest holder, by the way, of treasury bills, notes, and bonds is the, quote, Social Security Trust Fund. Okay, we gave them all the money that came out of our pockets for boomers, retirement, and we've lent it to the government. It's sitting there. When you open that shoebox, it's going to be full of government IOUs. But China owns $1.1 trillion. Japan owns another $1 trillion. So think about it. You really get the Chinese mad, not because of steel tariffs. That's not the big thing. But you want to start a trade war with China? We buy stuff from them, that cheap stuff, inexpensive stuff, let's put it, that makes consumers happy. Your sheets, your towels, Let's not argue about this. The fact is we keep prices down by buying low-cost imports. We give them dollar bills, not worth what, whatever the market says. And then what have they been doing with it? Coming back and lending us money to finance our deficits. If they just say, hey, we're not going to buy any more Treasury bills, the interest rates will skyrocket because we have to sell those to finance our debt.
Okay, in the minute we have left in this segment, let's do a
three good arguments why that was a dumb thing.
Let's do a debater's exercise.
Okay.
Make the point for it.
I would have to argue, and not even a good argument. It's purely a political kind of a thing to say, I am saving America jobs. But no country makes itself great by debasing its currency. The dollar has fallen. Nobody wants to hold dollars. Foreign investors don't want to hold dollars. There goes the stock market. Foreign investors don't want to invest here. There goes economic growth and jobs. I cannot make one great good point for a trade tariff. In fact, the worst point of all, if you remember History 101, was the Smoot-Hawley tariff, which turned a financial stock market crisis and banking crisis in the Depression into a global depression.
We all know Smoot-Hawley from Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, exactly.
So the Dow's down 333 points now.
Well,
is this a one-day drop?
No. I would like to make this point before we go to break. 9 years ago this week was March 9th of 2009 when I was sitting on this show and every other TV station saying, look, America will survive and prosper. We're going to get through this crisis. Don't dump your stocks now. Don't sell. You've now had 9 years of a bull market. I was really figuring on 10 and just saying, look, if you're near retirement, get a little more conservative. But if this kind of talk goes through and if we rattle our allies and the dollar falls, then this is the, and plus we know we're going to have higher interest rates and we don't get the growth that comes from the tax cuts, that is not good for the stock market. Don't be a piggy. It's time right now to look at your 401k, your IRA rollover account, and say, maybe I own too much in the way of the stock market.
That's Terry
Savage.
It is
not too late to balance out.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Bertrand, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
It's 12:23 on this Wednesday afternoon. Terry Savage is in the studio as well. You know, I always talk about Terry's website, terrysavage.com. You should bookmark it. A lot of stuff there that can help you, including a new column out. And this affects me directly. I'm trying to, because I'm doing my taxes.
Okay.
It's a long ordeal. And I'm trying to figure out how much to withhold for next year. And you write about a new calculator up at The IRS put it up.
Yes, exactly. It's not without a few bugs, but it's really important. Everybody gets excited about getting a tax refund check.
Yeah, you say that's a bad idea.
Government said the average refund check was $2,800 per return. So if some people are paying in at the end, then some people are getting a lot of money. They say they're getting it back from the government. Silly, silly, silly. You lent money to the government over the year by having too much withheld from your paycheck. You know, they don't pay you interest on that, but if you owe them,
charge
you a lot of interest,
and you think
you got a gift file your return.
You see that electronic balance just go up? It feels good. It feels good to get a tax refund.
But it was your own money. You know, thou shalt not fool thyself. First commandment of personal finance.
Well, I haven't gotten a refund in a long time. So,
all right. Well, here's the deal. It's going to be interesting this year for our listeners because although the idea of lower tax brackets meant you were going to, in quotes, you were going to get a tax cut and maybe your return would be easier to do because you have no personal exemptions but a bigger standard deduction. And then you would be thinking, well, maybe they shouldn't hold so much out. That's how it started out. But here in Illinois, where people who pay high property taxes and high state income taxes, and this year that will be capped at $10,000,
right,
not per person, but per return, you know, if you're filing a joint return. So you might actually wind up paying more taxes because you don't have those deductions. So the point is, it's time to recalculate. And how do you change the withholding through your W-4 form? The IRS made it easy for you. It's a long link. You can go to irs.gov and look at withholding calculator, or right on the top right at terrysavage.com is a link. You fill in things like, you know, how many dependents you have and whether your spouse is working, all that kind of stuff. You'll need some information off last year.
But I like it because I'm a sole proprietor. proprietor as well.
Well, you
and that helps me do that, yeah.
Yeah. And for people who estimate, forget people who have big things like capital gains taxes and so forth, you'll have to talk to your tax preparer. But for people who either make quarterly estimates, a lot of retirees, you know, they don't have withholding from pensions, maybe, and Social Security checks. So they have to estimate. Now, you're safe if you estimate, if you pay in quarterly at least 100% of what you owed last year, which would be for 2017, or 95% of your estimated tax liability. The problem is underpayment can give you a penalty, and overpayment is fooling yourself. So why not go and check and make sure that you shouldn't adjust your W-4 with your employer
read about
your
that
withholdings.
At terrysavage.com. The rule, though, is the fewer dependents you claim, the more they take out. Right, it's one of those things people look at that, and it's always confusing.
But exactly.
So if you want them to take the most out, you claim zero dependents.
Exactly. But if you do that, and you say, that's it, I'm covered, and the government never lends you money tax-free. Don't do that to them.
Right. All right, read more at terrysavage.com. Are you feeling better?
Not going to feel better until they do away with this idea of tariffs,
all right,
which is so silly.
1 to 100, what are the chances they change their mind?
I don't know. It's like a, you know, now I know what the expression a crapshoot means in Washington these days. You never know. And nothing good can come out of this.
You're
nothing.
Listening to the Wintrust Business. We're going to talk about population and estimates and stuff and the fact that we might actually reach peak population in the next 100 years and start to decline.
Well, that way we will not have to worry about unemployment, but we will have to worry about who's going to take care of all our old people
exactly.
if we don't allow
That's
young people or immigrants
point.
In.
We'll be more affluent because there'll be fewer of us, but we'll be older, too.
Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
You know, the United Nations says that by the end of, by 2050, I should say, there will be 10 billion people in this world. And by the end of the century, another billion more. That's a lot of people. There's a new estimate, though, from another group called the International Institute for Applied Systems Analysis. A lot of words there that says the numbers actually will be significantly different. So why does that matter 100 years from now? Steve Levine is on a phone line. He's an editor at Axios, and he's here to sort it all out for us. Steve, welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch. So tell me about these numbers. Now, the other institute I talked about is a group out of Vienna, correct?
That's right. Go ahead.
You tell me the significance. Why is a lower number better for the world than a higher number would be?
Well, the population, global population, is barreling ahead. That figure going over 11 billion people at the end of the century would be half again as many as we have now, and we've seen what's happened just over the last year or two with millions of migrants. When they get in trouble in certain countries, they flow north, and we've seen what that's done to the politics in Europe, and we've also seen what's happened with our politics here. So imagine another 4 billion people on the earth and what that means. So this new forecast we're seeing is that some of the places where the highest population growth is forecast, and that's in Africa, specifically Nigeria, but also India, won't grow as fast. And so actually we're going to have what they call peak human.
What's interesting to me, though, Stephen, is that it won't grow as fast, and it's not because of war or disease or things like that. It's about education, right? They're crediting education, specifically among women, for slowing down the population growth.
Exactly. So that in these countries, they're looking at historical data, and so this is not notional. What happens in a country as childbearing age women become more educated? What happens with the demographics childbirths shrink?
Right.
So they're forecasting a different number, and the different number we peak in the year 2070 in their forecast at about 9.5 billion, which is still a lot of people, but it's less than $11 billion.
And then that number starts to go down?
And then it starts to go down. The good news about that is it opens up new opportunities in where we keep looking throughout history for ways to increase, expand the economy to accommodate a higher population. If the population is shrinking, you can start thinking about improving people's lives without having to grow the economy.
The problem there, though, or at least the complication, is we've got to go through here to get there, right? So the population is going to continue to grow at a great number, so the resources will be stretched more thinly before they begin to expand for us. So it's going to get worse before it gets better.
And there are other complications. I mean, there's that. Also, the global population is aging. A lot of countries like Japan, Russia, and some European countries, their populations are dramatically shrinking and like cutting in almost half. And so for those countries, they wonder, how are they even going to support the remaining population?
Right. And so but once we get there, if we're okay, the pressures on the environment would actually be decreased. Resources per capita would be increased. So we might see, is it an exaggeration to say, a renewed affluence around the world?
That's what the forecast not evenly spread, but there's the opportunity for that. That is the thinking, is that if we think ahead, how are we going to deal with the situation from here to there? We could get to a place, yes, where countries can become richer, lifestyles better, and so on. And a lot of the problems that we regard today as intractable suddenly become solvable.
We're talking to Steve Levine. He writes at Axios. It's a great site. You should check it out and get their newsletters. I do. But Steve, this sort of relates to something you put up just today about this wave of populism, looking at President Trump and the tariffs and the elections in Italy over the weekend. And you referred to the displaced migrants who have caused such upheaval in Europe, and the fact that this wave of populism in some ways is fueled by that. And that's one of the more immediate things we're going to have to deal with, right? Figuring out how, if not to stop it, at least to corral this populist movement.
Yeah. So the two big drivers in the this wave of populism that we're seeing over so much of the advanced countries are one, the movement of migrants, people looking for a better life, and the other one, people not finding jobs, and those finding jobs, their wages are stagnant, and this is something it's not clear it's going to end soon. The last time that we had a dynamic of this scale was the Industrial Revolution in the 19th century, and from the beginning to end, it took between 3 and 6 decades for wages to catch up. There's no way of knowing how long it's going to last this time, but we're talking a prolonged period of tension.
So, Steve Levine, some political writers are talking about porn stars and payoffs. Steve Levine's looking actually to 100 years in the future to tell us how we'll be. And I'm glad you were here to do it. Steve, nice to talk to you again.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. It's a Wintrust Wednesday, by the way, and that means we take your questions about when it comes to business, startups, things like that. If you have any, send us a question via text, the text number 312-981-7200, and we'll address those on Wintrust Wednesdays. Our guest this Wednesday, Amelia Domenko. She's the president and CEO of Women's Business Development Center, and she's coming up just around the corner.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
Got a minute? Good, because I've got the Wintrust Minute, sharing the news and asking questions for small business owners. Newsflash, it's already March, the month spotlighting Irish heritage. The Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce is also featuring Irish businesses at their annual Ireland Luncheon next Friday the 16th. They'll be chatting with a panel of execs and the Irish Minister for Diaspora and International Development. The world is getting smaller, and international business is very realistic these days. But keeping things local, the CEO of Skender is dreaming big. He's building hotels and apartment buildings with pre-made units. Their general contracting business is investing in a manufacturing space in the southwest side, where they will build parts of these buildings and then ship them to the job site and hoist them up and connect them to the structure. One of the best parts is that Skender will look to hire possibly more than 100 people to make this dream come true. Tune in tomorrow for all of your up-to-date business news on WGN Radio.
Back to Steve Bertrand and the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
It is 12:52 on this Wednesday afternoon. Thanks very much for tuning in. You know, we're introducing in the past couple of weeks Wintrust Wednesdays. And today on the Business Lunch, we're talking to Amelia Domenko about issues women face when it comes to starting businesses and running businesses. She's the president and CEO of Women's Business Development Center. Amelia, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you. And so I want to start just by asking, there certainly are similar obstacles that men and women face when starting businesses.
Absolutely.
But when it comes to differences, is it just de facto harder for women than it is for men?
It all comes down to one word, and it's for women and other underserved communities. It has to do with access. There isn't a level playing field for access to contracts, capital.
Right.
And networks.
So we talk a lot about access to capital here, and I know there are efforts to address that, but when it comes down to it, if you are a man running a business, it's easier to come up with the cash than it is if you're a woman.
Well, you have access to these networks, and when you look at who the decision makers are, unless they reflect the community, and how I can address that is we lend money directly at the Women's Business Development Center, as well as place debt and equity. And if you look at the demographics of those that we serve, and you look at the demographics of a traditional bank or a traditional venture capitalist, they would be 180 degrees different than what we see. And the performance is almost the same.
Is there not pressure on the banks to help when it comes to gender equity as well?
Yes.
Equity, gender equity?
Yeah. Yes. There are regulations in place to encourage traditional lenders to support everyone in the community. And there are efforts, but it hasn't manifested itself in equity and access.
So, but there are groups such as yours and more groups like yours coming up. Are we getting closer to being equal?
I believe it's very much tied to public policy. I mean, the reason that women now receive almost 5% of all federal contracts is because of the commitment of the federal government. The reason why 17% of all loans go to women today is because of regulations that are in place. But it really takes public policy to put a spotlight on where the growth opportunities are. And there are huge growth opportunities when you look at the impact that women have on the creation, and minorities, on the creation of jobs and the generation of revenues. When we look at just the 1,800 that we certify as bona fide 51% owned, managed, and controlled companies, right, they created, they contribute revenues of $11.5 billion and created over 86,000 jobs.
Tomorrow is International Women's Day. You say that hopefully all of us, are on the brink of momentous change for women in the workplace. What is that change and how close are we?
I don't think it's going to happen in my lifetime, but I do think we've made tremendous strides. This time in particular, with Me Too, Time Out, Progress for Change, I think we're on the cusp of something. I don't think it's going to take 200 years, but it's going to take a little bit longer.
Amelia Domenko is the president and CEO of Women's Business Development Center. I hope you'll come back.
Oh, I'd love to. Thank you, Steve.